The Secrets of Stargate is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
You're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, episode 149.
General West, Jackson has identified the seventh symbol.
All right, here we go. We are about to try to make a connection.
All we gotta do is bust out of here, commandeer the ship, and fly on home.
Indeed. You say that a lot.
I know that this could be dangerous. But this is our job, right? It's what we signed on to do.
It was never about going home. It's about getting us to where we're going.
Hi, I'm Jack Berezini, and you're listening to The Secrets of Stargate, where we talk about the hidden meanings and deeper layers found in the Stargate movies, TV series, and more. And joining me today are Father Corey Stika. Hi, Father.
Howdy, Jack.
And Lisa Jones. Hi, Lisa.
Hey, Jack.
And Victor Lambs. Hey, Victor.
Hi, Jack.
I promise I will not start talking about Dune Part 2 since I saw that yesterday. I'll have to save that for another show.
Yeah.
We are Dune 2-parter today.
True.
Oh.
That was a joke.
Yep.
insert the board looking monkey. Boom.
Yes. Today we are discussing the two-part finale of season 7, Lost City, which maybe it'll be found. We'll find out. It's the climax of SG-1's seventh season. They uncover crucial information about the lost city of the ancients. Jack O'Neill gains access to the ancient knowledge repository by sticking his head in yet another alien device, leading the team on a mission to find the lost city before Anubis can use its power to destroy the Earth. Meanwhile, Earth faces a looming attack by Anubis. There's a new civilian leader, Dr. Elizabeth Weir, who's taken over the Stargate Command from General Hammond. The team faces off against Anubis. There's a lot of planet jumping in this episode. And they're able to finally discover that Atlantis was the friends we made along the way, as they say. That was the real lost city. And roll into season 8. What were your thoughts on this episode, Father?
Yeah, this is a good episode. I mean, for a season closer where they're basically setting up Atlantis, you know, this is getting us ready for Stargate Atlantis. It's a good season closer. Yeah, there is a lot of jumping planets and jumping in ships and things going boom and all that kind of stuff. But it's a longer episode because at least when I watch it on DVD, it is not presented as a two-parter. It's presented as a movie format. So it's all together. Mm-hmm. So that makes a difference too. It makes it a little bit longer because you don't have that break in the middle for the cliffhanger, but it's a good episode, enjoyable episode. We do finally learn that yes, the lost city did come from Earth and it was Atlantis and it's in another place somewhere. And we'll find out next season exactly where that somewhere is.
Yes. What about you, Lisa?
I think that the Lost City 1 and 2 are all together probably one of the best episodes of Stargate mm-hmm. ever. They it just very good plot. Amazing team moments. After all season, I've been complaining about not seeing them together. They make up for it all in this season finale. Special effects, story building, world building. I mean, I guess you look back and you could tell that it was supposed to be a movie because of the way it's done so well. But it gives you all the feels. I love it.
This is a better Stargate movie than the first Stargate movie.
Yes.
What about you, Victor?
Yeah, I really like this one too. It's classic textbook, big spectacle, Stargate. You know, we have action, we have intrigue, we have solving puzzles, we have, you know, tender moments between the cast, we have guest stars. And yeah, as Lisa mentioned, it was originally going to be a full feature length movie that was going to basically end the SG-1 series and usher in Atlantis. And then, of course, they didn't do that. And so they had to scale it back a bit to get it to fit into two episodes. And they banked their money that they saved from doing the clip show last week, and they banked their Richard Dean Anderson time as well, so that they were able to. Yeah. And it was listening to the commentary, it was really important that they have the full team together for most of this episode. You know, off gallivanting around the galaxy as they do. So that was a conscious choice and much appreciated by myself and fans.
I feel like this is the first time we've had them all together in forever.
Oh, it's been mm-hmm. almost the entire yes. season.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. And I did think it was funny that at the start of the episode, Jack O'Neill just seems very done with everything. Like he doesn't really care.
Yeah.
Which I don't know how much of that was Richard Dean Anderson coming through on that.
Could have been.
Yeah, no, it's... Yeah, it was good. I like the crossword puzzle. I like the fact that that's later used to solve the mm-hmm. the riddle of the ancients with his brain reverting back to the ancient language. Mm-hmm. That was a nice touch there. But yeah, it's I thought they handled the stuff with the president really well.
Yeah,
because he comes across as. Because, like, from the audience perspective in the show, you have anyone who comes in and shakes up the core team of General Hammond and SG-1 is automatically going to be viewed negatively. Mm-hmm. But they did that in a very creative way with Dr. Weir coming in, and she doesn't really know what to think because she's getting thrown into the middle of all this. She doesn't have military experience, and then the president is kind of having to play politics a little bit because of Kinsey and... The resolution to that was fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. This is, you know, Weir one. We get kind of, you know, Weir two when season eight starts.
Blonde Weir and brunette Weir.
Yeah.
do they switch actresses?
Yeah, they do.
Yes.
Yep.
But, you know, that's nothing against, Jessica Steen, who plays Weir in this episode, does a very good job coming in. You know, someone, a civilian known for brokering deals. Which I guess used to happen a lot more in the 90s and 2000s, you know, diplomacy working, I guess, than it does today. Because they're like, yeah, that deal you did between those two countries, that was really something. And now it's like, what diplomacy? But yeah. And so that, you know, Dr. Jackson mentions that, you know, that, oh yeah, I referenced some of her stuff when I was working on the, you know, our alliance with the Tok'ra and stuff. So it's a good introduction to her, but you're right, Jack, you're not sympathetic to her when she first comes on the scene, and she does earn the audience's trust as well as SG-1's trust too.
Mm. Mm-hmm. And I also like the president a lot. I wasn't sure about him in the last episode, mm-hmm. but we've hardly seen him at all, but he right. told Kinsey to shut up. So he's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's right.
Well, of course, as soon as Kinsey Wright shows up, I write down my notes. VP Kinsey's still a slimy jerk.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know. The only negative review I found about this episode was negative because they hate Kinsey and they really, really, really didn't feel he was necessary to this.
Which by the way, that shows how incredible Ronnie Cox is as an actor. Yeah. He's just because every character he plays, it seems like as soon as you see him, it's like, I'm going to hate you. And it's not because Ronnie Cox is a bad guy. Supposedly he's actually, you know, you read, you know, stories about him. He's actually a very, you know, gentle person, but he just plays these kind of jerks so well.
Yeah. In the commentary, they mentioned that he is, you know, the nicest guy. He would sit in his trailer playing the banjo and singing, you know, in between all takes fun. And stuff.
That's amazing.
And everybody from their trailer would be putting their ears up against the wall so they could hear him, you know, playing and singing in his trailer. But yeah, I mean, he's a accomplished bluegrass musician.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to look at this stuff. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's got to be a lot of fun to play a character like that, I imagine. Yeah. Just to get the audience like to hate
just
you
so
much.
Just being conniving and.
Yeah.
And kind of over the top at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But they really needed like the worm tongue, you know, for Weir kind of whispering in her ear, you know, like mm-hmm. don't trust these guys. They create more problems than they solve to kind of, you know. Otherwise, you wouldn't be as on the fence about her. You'd be more mm-hmm. sympathetic to her initially. But with Kinsey there kind of trying to pull her away, you know, you're like, is she going to buy into this? Does she see through, you know, Kinsey? And of course she does.
Yeah.
And it helps us trust her to see that she's, you know, she made up her own mind and she really was the person in the middle trying to do the best.
Right. And I love that. I love that scene where she's, you know, she's in formerly Hammond's office. Now her office mm-hmm. is like, this is my desk and I make the decision. And basically tells him, go away. You know,
yeah.
Don't let the door hit you, you know.
Yep. And that's when he realizes, like, from that point, like, he's just focused on getting her out of that position because he knows he cannot control her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we have two ticking clocks, basically, that, you know, the team needs to bring We Are Around to their way of thinking, SG-1 does, for two reasons. The first one is, you know, Jack only has a week or two to live now that he's been, you know, uploaded or downloaded right. the ancient repository again. So if they shut down the program, you know, Jack is essentially dead, you know, because they went back to the Heroes planet, the planet from Heroes, which I don't remember that big statue being there in that episode in view of the gate, but it's there now.
I think what I read is that it wasn't.
Yeah, it wasn't. Yeah. So, and then it was a lot further of a walk from the ruins to the gate too, which was, but anyways, and so they're attacked by Anubis's forces, including, you know, a bunch of Jaffa. And then, you know, when the Jaffa mess up, Anubis takes the Kull warriors and uses them to kind of wipe out the Jaffa. And so we see the, you know, the changing of the guard there. Anubis has no tolerance mm-hmm. left for the Jaffa. And we'll just send the Kull in to, you know, clean up. But Jack does get the knowledge. And so that's one of the ticking clocks there. And then Braytex shows up as well and says, bad news, guys, Anubis is on his way. Because he knows you have the knowledge of the ancients and this will not stand with him.
Yeah, heck of a first day on the job for Weir.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. The world's about to end in 3 days and you're in charge and you really don't know which way is up right now.
Well, as Kinsey said, great timing.
Yeah. Well, I like Braytek when he comes through and Weir introduces mm-hmm. herself as the new in charge. Has Hammond of Texas fallen in battle? And she's like, no, he's just retired. And that just, Braytek can't understand that. Retired? Yeah. What is this retired?
right.
And I love the scene after they get back from the planet and Jack knows he's got a couple weeks before his brain is wiped, if that. Mm-hmm. He's just hanging out at his house. He takes like the weekend off to get his effects in order. First, Sam shows up and he doesn't have any coffee, so he offers her a beer. And then Daniel and Teal'c come up, and of course they brought donuts. And then we get Hammond at the door, and he's like, "Do you have another one of those beers?" So they're just sitting around.
Guinness and donuts—the breakfast of champions.
Yeah.
That is some of the best team interaction I think of the whole series. Is first Carter and Jack with, you know, all this so much unsaid going between them, and then the four of them, and then you know, I don't know if it's a commercial break or whatever, but you come back and you have O'Neill trying to talk about the Simpsons, you know, Burns as Gould, and then you know,
and lightweight
Tipsy
Daniel
jumps in.
Well, we know that Jack has the Simpsons collection on VHS, and Siler's going to get that.
Yep.
I love it. I love that whole interaction between them. Like when Daniel shows up and he's like, funny story. I got in the car and I was driving past and, you know, it's just it's so cute. And I don't know how much of it was improv'd or written, but that was real kudos to showing their friendship as well as, you know, they're a team, but they're also really friends and care about each other.
Yeah.
And Sam was, she was trying to not say, I'm worried about you. I'm coming to check up on you and you're going to have to deal with it. So I was like, well, it's a funny thing. I just started driving and just happened to show up here. And Daniel's like, and Daniel just started driving with Teal'c and we just happened to get donuts and show up here with, you know, show up and see your car, you know?
Yeah. And then I like how she says, when she gets there, like, how are you feeling or whatever? And he's like, can we not, like, and then she sees a picture of Charlie and the ex-wife, and she's like, do you ever talk to her? And he was like, can we not talk about that?
Either?
Let's talk about the Simpsons and how Burns is a Gould, which I buy into that
Love
theory.
It. Yep.
Yeah.
100%. But and then they all feel guilty that they should have been the one to stick their face in the thing. Well, not Teal'c because he can't, but the other two. So it was just really nice kind of recognition of what he was going through in the struggle and that they could be losing another team member.
Yeah.
Permanently.
And Robert C. Cooper did say that, you know, he had heard from the fans that they really just wanted more time of SG-1 hanging out you know, without a crisis. Mm-hmm. And so this scene was really written for the fans.
Nice.
And one line that was ad-libbed was when Jack brings Hammond the beer, the line was supposed to be, because it's a Guinness, he says, "I find it an effective meal replacement." But Richard Dean Anderson just started going off and saying, "I find it an effective substitute for food."
Food.
Yep. So, yeah. So
that first sentence comes across a little stilted, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely, that's definitely much more of a Jack way to say it.
Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which, I mean, that's what Monk's developed stout beer for, so he's not wrong. Yep.
Yeah. True. And so Hammond breaks the bad news to them, but it turns out he's not allowed to retire. He's called to the White House and pushed pressed into service by the president, which is cool because the two of them have a history. They're both lieutenants, I guess, in the Air Force.
Back in 1969.
Yeah, that's right. that's right. Yeah.
We didn't see the future president. At least I don't think they had somebody with that actor, or not that actor, but that character.
That
would be funny if there was a Lieutenant Hayes there or something. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, we know that was back then is when they knew each other.
Mm-hmm. Was interesting because when Hammond breaks the news that he's been removed, they don't, they seem to take it pretty well, you know? And I like that Hammond says he's a good guy, whatever. It's so they build so much. There's so much information and plot moving pretty quickly. But they could have angsted about that for a while, but they didn't. Let's just move on because we got a whole bunch more to do and see and talk about.
Yep.
I think Hammond also realizes that because Kinsey is the number two in the country now, he's got a lot more pull. And because he has the ear of the president, Hammond being in D.C. is going to be much more effective for protecting the team than him being.
He pretty much explicitly says that. He's like, yeah, I can do more work there now than I could.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then the team is left waiting around for Jack to start to ancient out, you know, waiting for him to start, you know, using ancient words instead of the English equivalent.
Waiting for him to start feeling Kruvis.
Kruvis, yeah.
That's
yeah. Durantis, yeah.
So I did get a kick, you know, talking about going to D.C. and working with the president, how there were one point there were three generals in the Oval Office. One of them was an actual general.
Mm-hmm.
So you had General Francis Maynard, was played by James McDaniel. He was the Joint Chiefs of Staff. And, you had General Hammond. And then you had General John Jumper, who was the active current Air Force Chief of Staff. So he was an actual Air Force general playing himself in the Oval Office. And he said, I saw this from the inauguration wiki page, that the Oval Office set they used was almost identical to the actual Oval Office because, of course, as being a member of the chief's staff, he's been in the actual Oval Office.
And he had been lobbying to get on the show, like, basically from his first day on the job because the previous... The previous, you know, Air Force general had been on the show. So when he, like, day one, he's like, when do I get to be on Stargate? And so his...
That's great.
His people were, you know, they were sending clips of his speeches to the Stargate producer saying, see, he can read lines. You know, you could trust him. And then they wrote the part for him and sent the part. And his staff was saying, hey, make his part a little bit bigger. Give him a few more lines, you know, that sort of thing. And so they expanded his part a little bit.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
That's funny.
It would be nice as the writers and producers of the show to be in the position, not of you asking them, hey, do you want to come on the show, but having them like basically begging to let you come on the show.
Yeah, I mean, they had nothing but good things to say about General Jumper and his time on the show. And good. But yeah, I mean, he did very well. I mean, you can't, if you didn't know that, you would just think he was an actor. You know?
Yeah, I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. So I just assumed.
Yeah, I can't say if I was in that position, I wouldn't beg to be on the show too. So
exactly,
yeah. I think all of us would.
Yeah. Well, we did have an award winner, Bonnie, when he brings Bonnie into the office. She was I forgot it was a sci-fi contest they were running. What was it called?
Get in the Gate.
Get in the Gate.
I remember when they were running that, and I was like, oh, I hope I win, but of course.
Yeah, it's a Bonnie one. Yeah.
Nice.
That's awesome.
So she got go on the set for that. And I think she got tours and it was like a whole big thing, but she got like a whole little five seconds part on the show.
Nice. That's awesome.
So we're back on in the SGC and Kinsey's there. Weir is there. SG-1 is there. And they're kind of, you know, trying to explain the situation to Weir. Kinsey's trying to pull her aside. And Jack finally says to her, you know, who are you and why are you here? Mm-hmm. Which kind of, you know, makes her stop and think and about why is she here? You know, is she here just to, you know, do whatever Kinsey says or to make decisions?
Right.
It seemed like the president, this is more in like retrospect from the end of the episode, but that he knew like he's got to both have someone who actually can fulfill this role and also appease Kinsey for the time being. Mm-hmm. Of course, that doesn't matter at the end of the episode, but he played it well, getting someone who could kind of do both those things.
And he acknowledged that the politics of it to not have a military person for when it does come to light.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten how much I liked Weir in this the first couple of meetings. I guess it was a different actress, but still, I like the character. I like the way she approached things, that she was trying to be very thoughtful, being very measured, you know, and do what she feels is the right thing. And I love the way that she saw Kinsey and she saw the politics of it and knew that she didn't really understand why she was there, that there was something bigger. So I've forgotten how much I liked her character originally.
And I really liked her first scene with Daniel too. I mean, we get some comedy out of the Bluetooth, you know, headset that everybody was wearing. You know, that comes up a couple times where there's like, no, I wasn't talking to you. You know, there's a couple moments in the episode where they repeat that beat, but you know, Daniel very subtly comes in and says, yeah, I used to stare at the gate for hours, you know, while trying to unlock its mysteries. And she says, oh, is that like, are you trying to tell me that you've been here since the very beginning? And he's like, subtle, huh? You know, so it's a good moment where they're trying to, you know, influence each other a little bit there. But it's, I like that moment.
Yeah.
And I do like the way they introduce her. She's hailing the taxi cab and then the Russian guy is doing the exact same thing. And that was a good bait and switch to throw you off, because you see some random guy speaking Russian and you're like, oh, there's going to be something going on with him. And there wasn't
he was just speaking Russian.
Just random guy.
He was just a Russian guy who was going to try to take her taxi.
And then you immediately
know that she's an educated person, speaks a lot of languages, you know, there's something going on. Right.
Well, and of course her, you know, as you mentioned, she figures out Kinsey fairly quickly. You know, of course, I mean, there's one point where he's pretty obvious, like, I'm a dangerous person that you don't want to cross. You know, I know people in this town kind of thing. And and she's like, okay, I'm going to get as far away from this guy as I can.
Yeah. He's threatened her pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not subtle at all.
Of course, I will say this was 2005. Sorry. I loved her clothes.
Yeah.
Loved him. That, you know, I don't know what color blue that was, suit. And I just, I'd forgotten about all of that early 2000s. So I was like, I should go buy some of that. It's probably back into style now.
I was going to say it's been 20 years. It's probably coming back
around.
And the Meg Ryan haircut, you know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You forget how short hair was really, really in style late 80s, literally like early 2000s and stuff. All those haircuts, even the new Weir is going to have a short haircut too.
Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, and you mentioned that, you know, Weir was selected in, you know, as a non-military person for when the Stargate program went public. Mm-hmm. In the original movie version, you know, we get references of the president writing a speech. He's like, it's got to be a really good speech, you know. And then later on, we see him watching the TV that's staticky, and it was supposed to be his speech that was going out to the world. And the speech was the disclosure of the Stargate program. And that's how they were going to end the SG-1 show, is with the disclosure of Stargate to the whole world. And then Atlantis picks up, you know, where it does. So that was all cut out when, especially as they were continuing SG-1, you know, would put, you know, the continuity of the show in a precarious place. You know, they would have, although it probably would have been more interesting than the three seasons we got if it was, you know, in a post-disclosure world. But oh, well.
Well, what's interesting is this is how many times that they thought they were ending the show, ending the series, and having to scrap it. And what I read was that it was the Sci-Fi Channel that they thought they had them on board, that we were ending SG-1, doing the movie and then going into Atlantis in SG-1's spot. And that Sci-Fi was like, no, we're just going to do both. And that left them scrambling. How do we do both? And so, especially Richard Dean Anderson trying to get out, trying to, go back to LA.
Yep. They keep pulling me back in.
Yeah. And so I read that Donis Davis had volunteered during season 7. He had volunteered during season 7 to basically have General Hammond retire so that O'Neill could become the general and then he could take charge. And that would help them out with season 7. And they said, no, we're just, trying to get through the end of the season. And of course, that is what's going to happen going forward. That it was just so interesting. And they keep trying to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I feel like that's
and this wasn't a case that they were being canceled. They thought, we aren't going to be renewed. No. This was more like, we're ready to wrap it up. And Sci-Fi is going, no, we want more. This is good. We want more.
I guess that can probably, the decline in the quality of the next 3 seasons can probably be attributed to the fact that they were ready to wrap up the narrative, but got to keep milking
it. A little bit.
Yeah.
There's definitely some of that.
I think a lot of it came with having to bring on new characters, that you lost the team.
And the fact that the core writing staff was now writing for 2 shows.
Yes.
They were writing like 40 episodes a year instead of
20. And they wanted to focus more on Atlantis with their writing than
And it shows, yeah.
Yeah.
But
I'm excited to get into Atlantis.
Yeah. Well, we do, and it is kind of cool. We do actually hear the Atlantis theme a couple times here. Both times, I think, when they go into the different chair rooms on Earth and then on Fire Planet or whatever it's called, Proctor's Theonos or whatever.
The point I recognized it was when they were on the Earth one, and I think it was Daniel said something about, so this isn't Atlantis. And in the background, you can hear the Atlantis theme start.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
But I do like their little puzzle because, Jack is, as you say, filling out the crossword puzzle, and it looks like a nonsense word. And so then they go to the cafeteria, of course, because everything, all meaningful conversations happen in the cafeteria.
Well, of course.
And Jack is able to explain to Daniel using the emblem on his, thing. And then, what's this? Shh. What's this? Shh. And then that it's a phonetic alphabet, that the ancients' gate addresses were basically a phonetic alphabet. And so they could speak words and that would be the gate address, which I thought was really cool.
Which unfortunately we don't ever see again.
Yeah, we don't. And it,
it's a cool idea, but we never see it again.
I was wondering about that as they presented it because it's a cool idea, but then it also vastly limits what you can call planets. Like, I guess it would just be their nomenclature because you've got the select number of symbols.
It's easier than having to write down every time the address.
Hey, I work in networking. I'm used to writing down long strings.
Well,
of numbers.
imagine Jack if you had to write it down the IP addresses in binary.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
that's the equivalent. That's the equivalent. IPv6 in binary, 128 bit addresses.
True.
that was kind of the point. This wasn't the name of the planet, although that's what they called it.
Yeah,
it was. This is the address to get to that planet.
But of course, the gate's buried. So you need a ship. And they were talking about taking the Prometheus, but, they need to keep the Prometheus nearby. And I was like, don't they have like extra ships lying around? Like, or have they wrecked every Alkesh that they've gotten their hands on?
Probably.
Yeah, they have.
But yeah. So the only person that they have is like, super suspicious guy who's like, yes, I have a ship,
I'm happy to help you.
And apparently in the movie version they build up that character a little bit more, so he isn't just like conveniently there to be evil. Like it's a bit of a more of a slow burn with his character, but
he had like 2 scenes.
They could have just not had him.
Well, because they did like a couple like fake out deaths in this, and I feel like that was the worst part, where you have what's his name, Ronan. mm-hmm. comes in and he's conveniently got his ship and he's going to help them. But his one condition is he gets to go with them.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up stabbing Braytak and stabbing him where his symbiote would be, which I guess he doesn't. I feel like he doesn't know that Braytak doesn't have a symbiote, which if he is a planted spy by Anubis, that just shows that Anubis's intelligence is really poor. Like, I feel like that would be easy to figure out.
Well, Anubis, all his information he's gotten through his little brain scanner thing. And I don't think who all has been hooked up to it that we know of that would know that Braytak.
Jonas.
Yeah. Right? Jonas. But if he has Jaffa spies embedded with Braytak and Teal'c, I mean,
they might not be talking about it too much, do they?
About time for my true tonin injection.
Yeah, maybe Braytak doesn't share. Maybe he has some, like shame that he's not a true Jaffa anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Braytak wears a swim shirt when he goes swimming, so they weren't able to check.
It's for the sun.
Yep.
But, yeah. No, but they do get their little ship and they go to, and here is where it's kind of like the timing is a little weird. It's like, it takes them less than 3 days because Jack finds a way to speed up the ship.
Yeah.
And in that kind of cool scene where he, relinquishes command to Carter, and basically says, I'm losing my mind here. You're in charge. And then they kind of like have flashing lights. That's very distracting. But just there to show the ship accelerating, basically the lights get faster and faster. And so they're trying to have this tender moment and it looks like someone's
going
into flashing.
Plaid.
Yeah.
They still had a tender moment. Don't let the flashing lights bother you.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
And then she does take control and he gives her a little grief look and she's like, oh no, what did I just do?
Mm.
When she tells him to sit down,
Later on the ship. Yeah.
Yeah.
Taking control.
And then for the whole rest of the episode, he speaks nary a word, just some ancient words here or there, and spends most of the time just plugging things into other things to make them go faster.
Oh, like when they're getting ready to go on the ship and he's collecting all the stuff from all over base.
Yeah.
Gonna need this.
Just junk. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the props guy, they said they love giving Richard Dean Anderson like little toys to play with. So when he's sitting there with the soldering iron and making it spark, they said he just loves do it. He would just do that during takes, And so they'd always give him some little fun widget to play with.
Oh, that's funny.
Nice.
Yeah. Nice.
But that's when Anubis shows up on Earth. Boom. Yeah. And wipes out, I think, the Fifth Fleet or something.
Nimitz.
Yeah. The Nimitz carrier group. And that they were actually going to show that in the movie, but they didn't have the budget when it got adapted for television. They're going to show the ships coming over and Independence Day or something.
Yeah, there were a lot of Independence Day vibes with the scenes with the president and the invasion, which given the fact that Roland Emmerich made both Stargate and Independence Day, it's always funny when you get that convergence, even though this is a different team at this point.
Yep.
We didn't get President Hayes in a biplane or whatever that was at the end.
He didn't even have to get into Air Force One. So.
Yeah. Although Kinsey's ready to bail. He's ready to get out of there.
He's the only one, too.
Right?
Yeah.
Just like, oh, don't worry. We'll dial you up a planet.
That's where he kind of transcends to full 80s movie villain. He's like, the guy who's evil until his life is threatened, and then he's just like, I'm getting out of here, and then can't, obviously, because Anubis starts to dial into the gate, and Weir, knows enough to have them manually close the iris, because so good for her for studying the manuals,
because they lost power, all of the Cheyenne's mountain lost power so that they couldn't dial the gate out in time.
And I like the way they had her stay calm, stay focused the entire time, because it sets up for, I guess it's not really a spoiler that she's going to lead the Atlantis expedition. So I guess it's a spoiler, but it's 20 years. So whatever. but it was good because it set her up for that rather than going, why would you pick somebody who was a diplomat, negotiator, and then you put them in there for a couple of days and then you give them Atlantis. And so it was kind of a trial by fire, and she did really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. President does well, too, when Anubis shows up, or the hologram of Anubis shows up in the Oval Office.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the actor playing Anubis is shorter than William Devane, I think. Mm. And so they were hoping to get like a 7 or 8 foot tall, like hologram Anubis who would be there, like really superimposing next to the president. But instead, he looks like Darth Helmet or something.
Yeah.
Because his mask is so big, he's just kind of like sitting there. And William Devane tells him off. And
yeah. Never going to happen.
Yeah.
Plays his bluff right there to buy SG-1 more time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We get the too much at the end. Yeah.
He's a lot of fun. I like him.
Yeah.
Hammond, of course, gets to captain the Prometheus, which is my favorite part of maybe Stargate ever now.
With Walter by his side. Yeah.
Yep.
Walter. Yeah.
That's great.
But no yeehaw.
Yeah.
No.
But they do name much. They do name a ship after him though later.
Yep.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
right, what'd y'all think about the firefight?
Oh yeah, that was cool. But
that was fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was excellent. If we get to see also for the first time the ZPM too. The zero point module.
Yes.
Which is incredibly important.
They don't call it that.
No. They just say it's a power supply.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know that uses. Yeah.
Yellow crystal.
Uses vacuum energy to create almost limitless power, but it kind of becomes the MacGuffin as we move into Atlantis.
Yeah.
Because yep. they constantly need to recover them and find more. And
so it's the replacement for the Nakoda generators.
Oh, they have lots of Nakoda generators that they bring with them too. But finding ZPMs becomes critical for many different reasons and stuff. And so it's kind of like an when they say, oh, there might be a ZPM here, you're like, oh, this is so exciting. But it's like the thing they just dangle out in front of you. Quite, so just seeing it for the first time, you're like, it's the ZPM,
nice
and stuff. Yes. So and so they hightail it back in their little ship while Jack is working on it. And then we do get that firefight as they. Mm-hmm. As they center over Antarctica and start to drill down.
I like that where they showed how Jack rewired the transporter, the ring transporter, to basically turn into a drill.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
He uses it to turn into an energy powered or energy drill basically. And then is able to drill down and then they can use the ring transporter to get down there.
Although originally they were going to halo jump into the hole.
Oh, that would have been cool in the movie.
Yeah,
that would
have
been wild.
Yeah, that was in the movie version. They're up there and then they just halo jump like way down into the hole and stuff. But I think the rings work just as well. I mean,
Yeah.
Well, then you get that scene where he's like literally ripping all the work he did off of the ring transporter so then they can use it.
Yeah.
What did y'all think about the fact that we went to another planet just to come back to Earth?
I liked it because it was comical and.
Yeah.
There were a lot of things in this episode that felt like this is kind of how like your day job goes. Sometimes you're trying to get out of it and you can't.
Yeah.
Got to deal with bureaucracy. And then you got to go all the way over here just to find out that you didn't need to.
Yeah. Yeah. And I love too that it's, they go to this planet and it's like, this could be the lost city. You know, it's just all like covered with fire. And then they're like, no. And then they come back to Earth. It's like, oh, the lost city's on Earth. And then Daniel at one point's like, this room isn't big enough for a city. And so we have this two-parter called Lost City and we don't see the Lost City.
We don't actually find it.
They don't even know where it is yet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Still lost.
Yeah.
But, lost. Of course going to that other planet was so then they could see Earth, pre Antarctica becoming ice encrusted. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of cool. You know, get to see
the continental
get to
drift,
see that all the different land masses moved around since there wasn't the plates hadn't shifted as far.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we get the cool, holographic, stellar observatory that we saw in Torments of Tantalus as well. So that's always cool. And we get to see that ancient, the 3D holograms. They do that very well. And of course you needed the ZPM as well to power the chair on Earth. And so, they had to bring that back in this little cool pelican case. There.
Yeah,
of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could definitely tell that they wanted to go all out with their effects budget on this.
And they didn't they win an award for this one, didn't they?
I would assume so. But yeah, I mean, that last, I mean, they spent, I mean, all the money's on the screen when they get to that final firefight, as you were talking about, because, you know, there are little Alkeshes there. There's death gliders. Alkesh is coming in them. They're just trying to drill down. Then all of a sudden, F-302s show up and we get these cool, you know, camera moving through the battle as ships are flying apart. And then, of course, the Prometheus shows up to provide cover. And as you know, it's really cool. They do a lot of really excellent work there. And then, of course,
then we get the drones getting launched off and and destroying everything.
Well, Hammond's going to go full war first and ram Anubis's ship with the Prometheus. Yep. You know, he's like ramming speed and everybody's like, and then we get the, you know, the ancient drones, which, you know, they said they wanted something that they hadn't seen on the show before. And so we get these kind of like little jellyfish. I think they called them fireflies as they were producing, you know, the show. But I do like the way they come up, and from afar, they look like an energy beam, but close up, you can kind of see them just a swarm, and they swarm around the Prometheus. So they, you know, because Jack's controlling him not to attack the Prometheus.
Right.
And we get the moment.
You got to have that with the villain.
Which, you know, we didn't really see enough of Anubis. I mean, we did see some of Anubis, but that's kind of like, I don't know, a cheap way to get rid of him.
To end him.
Yeah.
But he's not really gone.
Oh, that's right. He just redoes his little.
Yeah, we see him. Okay. We deal see him again, in season eight. Okay. Well, at least three episodes.
So. Oh, and yeah, at the end of, I think that's how it all wraps. I don't know. I can't remember.
We deal with him.
We do see him. Okay.
He's gone in season, like, he's taken care of in season eight. But I like the way they ended it, because it could have been the end of the show. I mean, like, you took care of Anubis, but he's not really dead.
Yeah,
but they do bring him back in a really cool way.
Somehow Anubis returned.
Yes.
Yeah.
Episode three, season eight.
Warriors are flying around. Yeah.
And of course, in Atlantis, these drones become important as well. We see them quite a bit too. So.
And they find a way to, you know, every time we get technology that like solves all the problems, they find a way to make it not really solve all the problems. Or not be available, kind of like sarcophagus or whatever. So we don't get to see, I think they call them squiddies, right? Squids. Mm-hmm. So we don't get to see them. They don't really work as well. So that's good.
You got to have your brain toasted by the ancient language first to control them, I guess.
No, they're just...
They answer that issue later.
Yeah. Who can and who can't control them. Yeah.
Yep.
But so is Jack saved? No, he is not. He says he needs to sleep in their like little
Dormiring.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which freeze framed.
Yeah. So we get kind of the dormition of Jack, right? Not dying, just going to sleep for a little while.
Yep.
Yeah. You don't know how long.
And in case people don't realize, the ancient language is basically a changed Latin.
Yeah.
It's based off of Latin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Robert C. Cooper on the commentary said, it's bastardized medieval Latin. So, which is pretty obvious, you know.
Yeah.
So he goes into his little cryopod, and that's where we end the episode.
And I love that. I love that you think Anubis is gone, you know, Hammond did yay, but the team is still left. You know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's kind of nice, little poignant moment there, and they're all upset, and you know. Jack's frozen and you're like, oh gosh. And I don't remember how many months we had to wait.
Yeah, it was like over the summer or something like that, wasn't it? Or
I don't know.
Can't remember last year. When did this air?
This aired.
It was March of 2004.
Wait, I think they might have done them back to back, it looks like.
They should have. Yeah, I think they did them as like a two episode night, because I can't imagine them.
Yeah, it was March 19th. And then.
New Order came out in July. And then March 19th. So no, they did them a week apart.
Yes, there wasn't really a break.
No, I mean, they did Lost City 1 and Lost City 2 a week apart.
Oh, okay.
And they did them New Order episodes. Was in July. So that's not too many months. I mean, it's still like 3 or 4 months.
Well, that was back when your shows would be off the air for 3 months between seasons, not having 3 months of season and then being off the air for 9 months.
Or being off the air for 2 years, like Doctor Who or something. Or
and if Prodigy you remember, these cable shows used to premiere in the summer because that's when network was off.
Yeah. Right.
So when the network was in reruns, that's when like Sci-Fi Channel would launch. So So it says New Order was July 9th.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yep. The worst was Next Generation, Best of Both Worlds. I remember watching that and like Picard's like, I'm aboard now. And you're like, No, I have to wait like 3 or 4 months to see the ending. And it was like, Next Generation had like the worst, by worst, I mean the best cliffhangers, because you would just be like.
Of course, nowadays cliffhangers, you got to wait a year, maybe a year and a half for the next
two
seven.
2 or 3 years.
Yeah. What is it, like 7 episodes and then you get another year. It's terrible.
Yeah, and then you only get like a handful of episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was like,
awesome. This is a fantastic mini movie. I really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Kinsey is effectively off the table now. The president relieves him, says, I'll have your resignation on my desk first thing tomorrow morning. You know, he's obviously reviewed the contents of the disc because he says he has enough info on Kinsey to have him shot, which is another really good line reading.
Yep.
From William Devane.
Yeah. I'm talking about guest actors again, right? I mean, Ronnie Cox we've had before, but William Devane, I mean, obviously a very well-known actor coming into this. I mean, I feel like he just knocked it out of the park.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
And then Jessica Steen, I know I read something about why she didn't stay on as a...
As Weir? Why not? Weir. I wonder, because she was really...
But now I can't remember, and I couldn't find it. So I need to... And if anyone is listening can find that article, because I can't find it. Because I know she's done interviews about why she didn't stay.
Only thing it says on a wiki, she says, well, she doesn't know why she wasn't brought back. That, you know, she was even, you know, like they paid her, they basically put her on retainer so that she could come back for the spinoff, Atlantis. And then they just, for whatever reason, they chose someone else. She says the powers that be decided to go with another actress.
My theory is that her hair is too similar to Sam's and they wanted to get a brunette.
Could be.
I also wonder if they wanted, she was fairly well known. And I wonder if they want, I don't know, wanted somebody. If you think about it, cheaper. Atlantis, nobody was really well known.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I was thinking money.
Awesome. Y'all have any other thoughts on this episode?
So one thing we didn't mention is after Braytac gets stabbed, Jack somehow has magic healing hands and is able to heal him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's a side effect of the ancient knowledge, is the knowledge of how to use your hands to magically heal someone.
Mm-hmm. I feel like if you're going to give Braytac a dramatic death, don't make it a fake out.
Yeah.
Just don't do it.
Yeah. And what was funny about that scene, and you know, I was like, huh, that was weird, is like when they ring up, like Carter just like walks out of the ring, steps over Braytac to go to the front of the ship. And they were commenting that on the commentary, like Carter's like, that felt really weird to me. I didn't want to do it, but they needed her to clear the shot, you know?
Yeah.
But she doesn't even like acknowledge that. She just kind of steps over him. And
Braytac couldn't have died without saying like, I die free or, you know, all he's been trying to die this whole series. Remember?
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
He's got the Han Solo problem.
Yeah. But,
One more thing, Jack, when he, you know, says, I'm going to go, you know, go home. Can I go home for the weekend? Basically, he says, good. My favorite TV show is on. It's Friday night. What TV show is on Friday night?
Stargate.
Nice.
Oh,
Stargate.
That's right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I like they say you should go to the infirmary and for whatever it is. And he's like, why?
Yeah. Like, I know what's going to happen. Yeah.
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 I'm fine right now.
And you can't send him to there because they still haven't. I mean, ever since Frasier died, we haven't been back. So we can't tackle who's running things. Not at the end of the show. So
not enough time for
that. We'll do that next season.
Yeah. Did we have any alternate language titles for these episodes?
No, it was in all languages. It was Lost City Parts 1 and 2. So I thought that was cool. They didn't have to. They were stayed in their lanes and they didn't have to come up with
Jack gets infected by alien, the Germans,
Exactly.
Again.
Alien language.
Again.
Anubis, the end of Anubis or something. Yeah.
Anubis is gone.
That's right.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, before we go, we'd like to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create The Secret to Stargate, including Randy L., John M., Gary M., Jason H., and Linda C. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue The Secret to Stargate and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. And be sure to follow the show on Apple Podcasts, TuneIn, Spotify, iHeartRadio, and find our video versions at youtube.com/StarQuestMedia. And to find previous episodes of Secret to Stargate and to send us feedback, you can visit sqpn.com/Stargate. And you can email us at stargate@sqpn.com or follow StarQuest on social media at facebook.com/StarQuestMedia or on Twitter at sqpn. And be sure to check out the SQPN Discord at sqpn.com/Discord. And we'll be back next time when we'll jump into Season 8 with New Order Parts 1 and 2. Until then, Father Corey, thank you for joining me in sharing The Secret to Stargate.
Thank you, Jack.
And Lisa Jones, thank you as well.
Thanks, Jack.
And Victor Lambs, thank you, too.
Thanks, Jack. Following still, you not.
Me agree. Yes, I. And once again, I'm Jack Berezini. Thank you for listening to The Secret to Stargate on StarQuest.
Anyway, I'm sorry, but that just happens to be how I feel about it. What do you think?
Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Middle-Earth. Find it wherever you can find podcasts or at sqpn.com/Middle-Earth.